Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Lost in the Static. I'm Scott Murray, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Josh Hadley.
Hello.
Hey,
don't ask me why I'm doing that.
Falling apart.
Well, yeah, you sliced your thumb all off.
I sliced my thumb off. My teeth are falling out. It's been a bad...
Your hair's been gone forever.
Well, my hair's been gone since I was like 18, so, you know, there's no...
That was not new.
No saving that.
But at the same time, what about if you wanted to do something sexually, but because you're an ugly motherfucker now that's falling apart, where would you go and what would you do?
I would go to Lost. I would not go to lostinthestatic.com. I would go to...
I don't even know if that exists, honestly.
I'd probably somewhere. But I would go to adamandeve.com. That's what I would do. And I would get me some toys or some movies.
Objects.
Or maybe both or... Who knows? I don't know.
Well, and then what you would do is you would use the promo code STATIC.
What would that get me?
It would get you 50% off of a single item.
Okay.
It would get you 3 free DVDs.
Okay.
It would get you free U.S. shipping, and they'd even throw in a little mystery gift for your ugly ass.
A little mystery gift? What's that?
I don't know. It's a mystery. How the fuck would I know?
Okay.
But then also, if you don't want to play like that, there's a different kind of playing you can do. If you guys are into role-playing games, and I don't mean the sexual kind, you can go to drivethroughstuff.com and get these... I stumbled across this last week, too. Systemless Settings Bundle.
Yes.
Explain to people what that is, because I'm blah blah right now.
Well, these are systemless settings. That means that they're settings without a system, and they've been bundled together.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yes, okay. Basically, these are settings for your role-playing game. If you're kind of tired of doing the dungeon thing, but you really like using...
Shake it up!
Well, yeah, I was going to say, but you really like using the D&D rulebook or whatever. You can get this systemless settings bundle. It will give you a nice little setting and maybe a few new twists or suggestions on rules and... It will branch out your role-playing
experience,
definitely, and it will enhance things like you wouldn't believe. It's a way to get more from the gaming systems that you already have, and you don't have to, you know, that stuff like this doesn't require you to jump up to version 5 or whatever they're up to now. If you don't like it, if you're still using, you know, revision 2, perfect. There it is.
So, yeah, it's at drivethroughstuff.com and the Systemless Settings Bundle. Ha! I did it, fucker!
Well done. And that's, yeah, drivethroughstuff.com. It's, what, you know what's messing with me? If you go to drivethroughstuff.com and...
At the top of the freaking page, I know.
It says drive-through RPG. And so I keep thinking drivethroughrpg.com, but it is not. But yeah, and it's, what it's from is from Point and Game...
Point of Insanity.
Point of Insanity Game Studio, which is my friend Al down in Appleton. And
and you can get a free light bulb joke if you mention that,
yeah,
that you heard this on Lost in the Static.
Just let him know that you heard it on Lost in the Static, and he'll give you a free light bulb joke.
It'll make sense when it happens.
Trust me.
So, tonight I want to talk about... Now, they recently... They haven't announced this, okay? Fox has put out the feelers. How would you guys feel if we rebooted the X-Files in 2015? New characters, not a sequel, a total reboot of the X-Files. And you started to think, Forces of Geek did an article that summed it up perfectly. This will not work. The X-Files were the 90s zeitgeist. And that's what you had to have. The X-Files are the 90s.
They really are. They really are a product of the 90s. And yes, we know they went until 2002, but so did the 90s, really.
But
let's be honest.
Well, in all honesty, also, no one gave a shit about those last two seasons either, to be fair.
Exactly. But yeah, and it really was just a product that sits thoroughly in the 90s. You fire up an episode of X-Files, and from that opening theme...
The giant cell phones... When Scully goes on the internet in like season 2, It's still the text-based internet. And we're in, like, 1994. There is no... There's nothing that would make you go, ah, she's on the internet.
Exactly. She's still using Pine and Gopher and all of the text-based stuff. And it worked for its time. And, I mean, even just firing up that that beautiful X-Files, the text, the font that the title is in.
It's just that title sequence.
It's extreme. You listen to it. You're like, ah, 90s. Okay.
But, okay, then I guess my question is, why wouldn't the X-Files work today? For one thing, I think in an era where everyone has a cell phone, the internet is so pervasive, everyone's taking photographs, the NSA is spying on everybody, how is Sasquatch going to not, you know, hey, we saw Sasquatch, but we didn't get a picture of him or, you know, yeah. Whatnot.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, you know, everybody's a reporter now and everybody has video and everybody has these capabilities. Plus, when you have shows like Ghost Hunters and Finding Squatch or whatever it is.
Never heard of that one. Okay.
What is it? Finding Bigfoot?
I know there was something like Monster Hunters or something.
Well, yeah, there
like
was
that.
Monster Hunters. But you've got tons of these shows, and they're...
Ironically enough, inspired by the X-Files.
Yeah, they're cheap reality
blobs.
Yeah, shows where really they shouldn't be calling... They shouldn't call it Finding Bigfoot. They should call it Looking for Bigfoot and Finding Something That Doesn't Exist.
And Finding Scat.
Yeah, and Finding Scat. And somebody comes along and goes, that's Bear. No, it's got to be squat. No, it's Bear.
No, we're going to take it back to the lab and analyze it.
Exactly.
And then at the end,
it's
we're
Bear.
All disappointed. Son of a bitch.
Because it's Bear. Yeah. And you've got all of these silly shows. Plus, you have all of the intrusive stuff that the NSA has done that has come out, you know, in that NSA scandal. Plus,
the NSA thing, I don't want to drop that yet.
Sure.
Ironically enough, kind of what the X-Files predicted, how the conspiracy was going to spy on everybody.
Yeah.
Didn't they kind of predict reality in that case?
Yeah.
Even more so than the Lone Gunman pilot did with 9/11?
Yes. Yes. And on top of that one, like I said, in a post 9/11 world, when you've got the TSA and all of this stuff, I don't think people are that interested in the premise anymore. I think that I think we've frankly had enough of the FBI and the NSA and the TSA and all of the other various three-letter folks out there.
Let's go back to something like that Forces of Geek article, I think adequately pointed out. The 90s zeitgeist. It really did. The 90s were the only time you could really get away with the whole aliens are among us and the secret vampire and all that. That wouldn't have worked in the 80s. It definitely doesn't work in the 2000s.
Nope.
That needed to be the 90s. The 90s was the only time that kind of thing could have existed. And then we've got the fact that, look at the Lone Gunman pilot. That almost proves, even though it was pre-9/11 by 6 months, that these kind of things can't exist peacefully in a post-9/11 world.
Right.
Because now, speaking out against the government is treasonous. So now this evil government conspiracy, whether they're being relatively accurate or not with the NSA, is kind of seen as anti-American post-9/11,
well,
isn't it?
I think definitely 10 years ago, probably 5 years ago,
maybe not in 2014.
Maybe not in 2014 or 2015, especially with, you know, Obama's approval rating is falling.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of the bounce back from that one. We're starting to bounce back from that don't you dare say a thing about my president. We're really starting to bounce back from that, especially, you know, thanks Obama for fucking everything up. So I don't think that plus, like I said, with the IRS scandal and the NSA spying scandal, I think two things are happening there. One, maybe the X-Files would be a little too close to home a little too close to, yeah, this is definitely happening, or this
it's
is
a
most
little
assured.
More believable it's that the government more, would be yeah. involved in an alien conspiracy
exactly.
to infect us all with black oil.
Exactly. It's a little more believable. It's still not really believable, but it's a little more believable.
Slightly more plausible.
And I think people, I don't think that people today want to fantasize about their government spying on them
because they actually,
it
are.
Actually are. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what about certain other things, certain other pieces of pop culture, whether it be movies, music, or whatnot, that we talked previously about these things could have only come from the 70s, the 80s, whenever that they did, but how these things maybe could not happen today. For instance, a couple of years ago, I showed my son the 1990 movie Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater.
Sure.
A fantastic film. I absolutely love the film.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who have not seen it, it's about a pirate radio DJ named Happy Harry Hardon getting a youth audience and then finding a conspiracy at the school that he goes to. And it's a great movie. And I had to explain to my son, since we only watched this in like 2012. Now, the internet completely made pirate radio useless. But in 1990, this was so cutting edge underground. Something like Pump Up the Volume would be a podcast nowadays, wouldn't
right.
it, if it were made today?
Yeah, if it were made today, it would definitely be a podcast. Or
And it wouldn't have the impact, you know, that it did.
Or it would be on YouTube, or it would have a greater impact. Who knows? I mean, if he really went localized like that, it would affect the school if everybody at the school decided to subscribe to it. It would also be amazingly easy to find him.
Exactly.
Because the authorities would simply go, who is, and search the website.
That they would find his IP,
exactly.
the IP he used to upload it,
exactly.
or whatever. I mean, yes, you can hide that shit. We all know that.
Right.
But it's a lot more difficult than... Let's go back to the X-Files. There was an X-Files episode where they were dealing with a hacker. And, okay, he's like routed his IP through Malaysia, which is rerouted through a satellite through the... Okay, it's not that simple, okay? You can't just, I'm rerouting my IP through this, so now you have no idea who I am. Not the way that works, Scott, you know?
Right. Now you have to use things like Tor and even, you know...
And the FBI is all over Tor, so...
At the moment, yes. But there are deeper levels than other stuff that you can use that is even deeper than Tor. But, yeah, it's silly out there, and it's not... Tracing an IP is not like tracing a phone call. Well, now it is because everybody uses voice over IP, but it's not like tracing a traditional phone call.
It's not like something out of a 90s crime thriller.
Or Hacker. Do you remember the movie Hackers?
Fuck yeah, I did a projection booth on that.
Exactly. You remember how they stopped the phone trace because they took payphones and taped them upside down
yes.
against one another?
Yeah.
First off, bullshit.
Well, that whole movie is bullshit computer science,
right.
But okay.
Second off, with the right kind of phones and the right kind of connections, that would have worked. Not anymore.
Okay, you brought up Hackers. As I said on the projection booth episode, Hackers is probably one of the most 90s movies of all time.
Oh, yes.
Whether it's from the music, the fashion, everything.
The music, the fashion, the names, the whole idea of the hacker
Zero
underground.
Cool is, you know. It
didn't
screen
exactly.
name that aged well.
Yeah, it didn't really fly well. Neither did Crash and Burn.
Crash Override.
Right, Crash Override and it was Burn. Something Burn was hers, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And hence they end up with Crash and Burn.
But, I mean, could Hackers happen today? Let's say it's the same overall plot, okay, of Hackers. How different would that movie be if it were made in 2014?
Well, it would...
Even if they made computers do all the science fiction-y shit that they couldn't do in 90... They were doing shit in 1995 in that movie that they can't do in 2014 today.
Right. What you end up with is that biopic on Julian Assange.
The one with Khan in it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that ultra one-sided.
Yes.
This is basically a hit piece of
yes.
Julian Assange thing.
Yes, that would be the modern version of Hackers.
Yeah, okay.
Or, oh God, who is the actual military contact for WikiLeaks? I forget what his name was, but yeah, you end up with a movie about him. You end up with the actual crime, in quotation marks, taking place being rather mundane.
What about 8mm? You ever see that in the Nicolas Cage movie?
I think so.
Nicolas Cage is a private detective, and he's hired by this rich woman whose husband just died, and she's going through her husband's stuff, and she finds an 8mm snuff reel of, you know, a woman being raped and then killed on film. Ah. And she hires Nicolas Cage to find out, not if it's real, to prove to her that it's not real.
Okay.
And he gets drug into the snuff underground, which we all know is bullshit anyway, but, you know, the snuff underground and the disgusting, the ultra, ultra, ultra underground porno and all that. And it's like, you realize that is so 90s. Nowadays, this would all be done on the internet.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage would not be getting involved with the mob in enema porn, you know?
Right.
You know, like walking into those rooms. I'm sorry, that movie had to be 90s.
No, you end up with major corporations owning multiple sites, getting into multiple fetishes, and basically
it's a business now.
Yeah.
In the 90s, it was too, but it was a much more... I wasn't wrong when I said the mob. It was a much more mob-controlled business then.
Right, right. It really was. It was organized crime back then. Yeah. Now it's big business. Well, I mean,
that's still organized crime. I'm sorry.
The same thing happened with Vegas. You know,
in the 70s.
Yeah, it was mob controlled all the way through.
The mob built Vegas, man.
Yeah, exactly. And then, well, yeah, Bugsy Siegel built Vegas, built the Flamingo. The mob took over Vegas, ruled it all the way through the 90s. And then suddenly MGM jumped in and went, well, if these fuckers can do it, we can do it legally. Flablump. And then they made millions of bucks, and now you've got Disney Vegas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And the same thing happened with porn. Basically, business jumped in. People like Vivid Productions and stuff jumped in and went, wait a minute, the mob is making money. We can do this legally. Get all the paperwork together. Mm-hmm. And there it is.
Well, you know, I mentioned 8mm. Before the show, when you and I were talking, you mentioned 7.
Yes.
That 7 needed to take place in 1997? Did that movie come out?
I think that came out a little earlier. I think that came out in
95, maybe.
Five.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, by the way, I just want to point out that's a fantastic film.
It really is. It's one of my favorites ever.
It's just a fantastic movie.
Yes.
And that's one of those ones you have to see on Laserdisc.
Why?
It's the only silver retention version. Silver retention was something where they actually had silver in the film. David Fincher has a big introduction on the Laserdisc about this that makes, you know, the blacks blacker, the reds redder and whatnot. And it was so expensive, he had to pay out of his own pocket to get them to do this for the Laserdisc. And they didn't use that version for the DVDs or the Blu-rays. So he says the silver retention version, the Laserdisc, is the only true theatrical representation of 7 that's been put out.
Well, good.
Is the Laserdisc. So you need to find the laser.
But anyway. But yes, 7. You have John Doe keeping the notebooks and staying off the you know, the internet that didn't exist at the time.
Well, it did, but, it wasn't the way we think of it.
Right. And then you had that beautiful scene where Morgan Freeman went into the library to do research and checked out all the books.
On Dante and all that.
On Dante and handed them over to Brad Pitt.
Mills,
thank you. I was like Detective
Mills. Yeah, Mills. Morgan Freeman was Somerset.
That's right. But yeah, and handed all the books over to Detective Mills to have him do the reading, and he ended up with the Cliff Notes version, but
which was still frustrating to him. Remember, he got so pissed he threw it.
Oh yeah.
God damn it! Fucking Dante! Fucking Milton! God damn it! But yeah, 7. You know. That one's not as dated, because that one, I'm looking at it as, let's say that took place today and John Doe was still doing all the notebooks and everything hand. the Somerset was the kind of character in that movie who was going to follow John Doe's footprints. So he would have done it the way John Doe would have done it.
Right.
Where Mills would have cheated and said, fuck it, I'm going to use Google.
Exactly.
Somerset would have said, no, John Doe used the library, I'm going to use the library.
Right.
But then that brings up the plot point. One of the things that they flagged was who checked out all of these books. On the internet, it's not really that easy, unless you're the NSA. You can do that, but these were local detectives,
right.
So they didn't have the NSA connections. So, but yeah, something like Seven. Now, like one I brought up to you before the show, look at a movie like Die Hard in 89. You realize one person having a fucking cell phone in that movie
would have negated
changed
everything.
The entire film, wouldn't it have?
Yes.
You know, that you needed to have no cell phones. Because I don't think there's a single cell phone scene in that whole movie.
I don't think so.
And I don't know if that was a conscious decision or now this next one, I'm going to kind of put in a side category. Okay.
Okay.
Have you seen Strange Days?
Yes.
Now you could say, well, wait a minute. This takes place in the future of 2000, you know, made in 1996, the future of 1995, the future of 2000. And even in 95, we had the internet and cell phones and all that. Cameron and Bigelow specifically made a future where none of that is ever brought up. You never see anyone using a computer or a cell phone.
Right.
So that was a conscious decision to say, no, we don't want to go that direction. So do you think that said, Strange Days would have played out differently had they had the internet and cell phones? If they had not made that conscious choice to not do that?
I think so. But I think most things that didn't, you know, that didn't have this technology would have played out a whole lot differently if it had. And, what do I do? Where do I go with this? But that's, it's one of those movies where you're like, okay, let's be honest. If they had the internet, there would be no need to trade discs. There would be a repository or a torrent site or something like that, and you would simply download and experience and be done. And, you know, experiencing death or whatever the big plot point of the movie is, it would happen. And who knows if it would kill people or whatnot, but it would all play out online. None of these people would have met one another.
Okay, sticking with Catherine Bigelow and James Cameron, what about Point Break? Point Break, I think, would have been radically altered if you would have had the internet and cell phones, don't you think?
I'm trying to remember Point Break.
Keanu Reeves has to go undercover as a surfer infiltrate Patrick Swayze's gang of bank robbers while being tutored by Gary Busey.
I remember all of that, but I'm trying. How would it be different?
Well, for instance, like, you know, Gary Busey was the only one who was putting together that the presidents of the United States, the bank robbers, were all surfers and following their trail and whatnot, and he couldn't locate them and had to manually go to all the surf shops to ask. The internet, you would have been able to just plunk all that in. You're connected to all the other police databases and everything. Because remember, they didn't even have that back then.
That's true.
That interconnectivity. And it would have just made the whole need to go undercover to see if they're the right guys. Because remember, the first time they bust them, they're busting Anthony Kiedis and Tom Sizemore, who was an undercover FBI agent in there, or an undercover cop, and they didn't know it because they had the wrong people. I think the internet in general would have radically altered a movie like Point Break.
This is true. And if you, let's pretend that this happens in England for a little bit, look at the absolute amount of surveillance cameras that are up.
Yeah, you can't get away with shit in London.
Right. I mean, my God, it would, you know, that's, in fact, it's funny because the same people that produced Law and Order here produced Law and Order UK.
I've never seen an episode of that, but I know it exists.
And Law and Order UK isn't bad. It's just that
different, huh?
They had to radically change things because the police work very differently in the UK the justice system in general works very differently, and they have the police have more intrusive rights in the UK than they do in the US. And so a case that might fly here in the US and have people going, I don't know, it's kind of up in the air, and maybe, but would the UK would simply go, well, let's requisition this footage and this information from their workplace, and boom, there he is.
Okay.
And that's the way it is. So they had to radically change it. And I guess we could even kind of throw stuff like that in where this particular series could only take place in this place geographically.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of shows, if you do it right, if you do have something that's geographically specific and you do it right, it can only take place right in this specific place.
Classic Doctor Who.
Classic, how far are we going back?
Because
that's a wide, wide range, dude.
Prior to the movie.
The 96 So you're talking about when they went off the air in 87.
When they prior to them going off the air in 87. I'm talking about that first run.
Okay.
For as many years as it lasted, it wouldn't have worked as an American show. Matt Smith was the first one to really bring the Doctor to the US successfully.
Yeah, the 1996 movie was not successful right, at all.
Right. Matt Smith was the first one to bring it to the U.S. and set a series, or set a...
Do they have episodes that take place in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah.
Or is
it
basically UK-centric?
It's basically UK-centric except for one particular season that Matt Smith did that kind of floats around the White House and around a lot of parts in the U.S.
But
and
look at what happened with Torchwood when they came to the U.S. Miracle Day was fucking terrible.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. And well, I mean, hell, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy could only happen in England to an Englishman named Arthur Dent.
So technically, most of it happens not on Earth.
Not on Earth, but...
technically.
But you look at the cast and you look at the at their reactions, and it's like the universe is an English stereotype.
Okay.
Only an Englishman would react in the ways that Arthur Dent did. An American wouldn't react. An American would find a bulldozer in his yard and walk out with a bazooka and kill everyone. That's what an American would do. Yellow, fuck this. Boom, you know, and the end of and then Earth explodes and we have no story. Only the way that people and characters in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy react to one another and act with one another, only Englishmen would act that way.
All right. What about Fight Club? You'll notice there's never a photograph taken of Jack/Tyler. Other, you know, because you got to remember, his identity being the same person was not just a plot twist for us. It was a plot twist for himself that he didn't know he was two separate people.
Right.
So all he needed was like one photograph with him and Marla when it was supposed to be Marla and Tyler together, and she sees it's Jack and Tyler together. You know, that you've got all these other characters who are noticing the boss is talking to himself again, or the boss is talking to his invisible friend in the other seat again. But the character would have been changed if all he saw was video footage, if somebody snuck a cell phone into one of the fight clubs or something.
Oh, hell, let's
be
honest. One selfie.
Exactly.
End of movie.
Yeah. So to me, radically altered, or the internet even, you know, I'm sure if the internet was more pervasive in 99, you think before some of these people joined Project Mayhem, they wouldn't have maybe looked into this Tyler Durden guy a little bit?
Yeah, you would think.
You know? I mean, yes, I know we're almost nitpicking, but that's kind of the point, that these things require a certain time to have been made and to have been released, yeah. Which is one of the problems you get into, especially in direct-to-video cinema a lot, where something is delayed. Say a movie is shot in 1999, and then it, for whatever legal reason, it sits on the shelf for 5 years and comes out in 2004. And now it is so incredibly dated on every level. You just go, probably should have, if you weren't going to release it in 99, should have just
let it go.
Yeah, that this movie is, because I've seen a couple of those, because they always copyright them when they're released. And I was watching some movie from the late 90s on VHS, and I'm like, there's just something about this keeps screaming to me, like 1993, not 1999. And then I went and looked it up, and it was a movie that sat on the shelf for like 6 years. That it was made in 90. Because I'm like, this just, the vibe this is giving me is 93. The technology, the references. I'm like, nothing about this says late 90s when it actually was released.
Right. They're talking about the new President Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the ones I like are, I can't remember which movie it was, but one of the Seagal direct-to-videos, they actually edited in scenes from another movie to make it more exciting at certain parts.
Okay.
And the other movie was made years earlier. So all of a sudden, you've got like a 2008 movie, and everyone's got like 2001 cell phones in some scenes. And, you know, they got the larger cell phones with the aerials and all that. And I'm going, whoa, whoa, whoa. The footage actually cuts together, but something in this just, it tells you, whoa, 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 something's off here.
Something's not talking to one another, yeah.
Yeah, that I don't think these are from the same movie, you know? So, I don't know, sometimes the technology can aid a movie, sometimes it can hurt it. Like, have you seen the trailer for Space Station 76 yet?
No.
It's, I wish this were not a comedy, I wish they would have played it straight, but it's a 1976 style movie, a sci-fi movie. All the sets, the technology, the way the characters looked, the hairstyles, but unfortunately it's all making fun of the 70s sci-fi movies, which I find irritating. That's the kind of thing you play totally straight, that's the joke, you know? That you do it straight. Not that, haha, we know we're in a goofy 70s throwback movie.
Otherwise, you just end up with another Austin Powers.
Right. But you've got things like that where, yeah, there's no cell phones or anything because it takes place in the 70s, even though it's today. What about something like Manimal? You've seen Manimal, right?
Oh, yeah.
Manimal.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know that Will Ferrell
is doing a comic version, yes.
That, to me, seems like in 2012, or 2012, what the fuck, 2014, you can't do that. That is an 80s thing. Manimal technically didn't work for the 80s either, but you know what I mean when I say worked in the 80s.
Right.
It does not work today. And you know it'll be now filled, especially with Will Ferrell, it'll be filled with puke jokes and gross-out humor, and penis jokes, and, hey, look, I've got a penis the size of a panther. You know, it's going to be like that. And you just go, no, leave it alone. Stop mining the past because you keep fucking it up. That's the thing I don't get with Will Ferrell. You know, I've seen him in interviews where he genuinely loves Land of the Lost. And then he made that hate fuck to Land of the Lost movie. He genuinely loves Manimal, and you know this is going to be... he genuinely loves old news, and he makes those horrendous anchor... It's like, to him, hate fucking something is how you show you love it. I don't get it with Will Ferrell, you know?
I don't know. I think I think Will Ferrell thinks he's doing something right.
And he's
I gotta admit, the first Anchorman... I know you did. I loved it. Anchorman 2, different fucking story. That was a piece of shit from minute one to minute whenever it ended. But the first Anchorman, I enjoyed for the simple reason that I worked with him.
Oh, I did, you know, too. You know, we both worked in news.
Yeah, and we both worked with Ron Burgundy. And... so it was that.
Are you talking about the ex-baseball player?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just making sure we're talking about the right one.
Yes, we are. And
even with the drinking problem, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the misogynism.
Yep.
And the ego problem.
Yep.
And yeah, actually, we kind of did. He just didn't have a mustache.
Yep. And we worked with Victoria Corningstone.
Without saying names, which one specifically did we work with there? Give me a few features.
Well, let's be honest. It would be an amalgamation. It could either be our Latina news crush,
She was good, though.
She was good, but so was Victoria Corningstone, to be honest. I mean, she was probably the best reporter out of the bunch of them. And then look at how our Ron Burgundy interacted with his co-anchor.
Yeah, that's very true. Very sexist, very...
She would be in the middle of reading about a murder, and he would be farting, giggling, trying to break up her story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still didn't find the movie funny, though.
I found the movie funny for the simple reason that I was like, I'm living this.
But, I mean, like, you know, I know we're off topic a little bit, but like with Will Ferrell, how does he proclaim to love the original Land of the Lost and then make that movie?
See,
No, a hate fuck is the only way to do it.
I think he thought he was doing something right. He was going to take something classic and...
I know.
We know. Let's get back on topic. Hi, everybody. This is my calm voice.
Well, okay, speaking of Land of the Lost, the franchise as a whole... Why didn't the Will Ferrell one work? Why didn't that work in what year did it come out? 2010? 2009?
2010, I think.
Why did that not work? Leaving the stupid comedy aside, why did just the very premise not work?
Let's think for a minute. Why did Sid and Marty Krofft's Land of the Lost work at the time?
Because you were either a kid or you were high.
You were either a kid or you were high, and you were willing to put aside your disbelief. They played that completely straight.
Oh, yeah. The original Land of the Lost, honestly, if you take out Chaka and some of the goofy dinosaur stuff, there's some really smart science fiction stories in there.
There's some extremely smart science fiction stories in there. There is some adult humor in there, meaning humor that only adults would get.
We're not talking dirty. We're talking about if you're under 30, you're never going to get this joke.
On top of that, there is the characters lived completely within their world and didn't play down to one another. This is another show from Sid and Marty Krofft that didn't talk down to kids. Yes, it was unbelievable. It was great. Well, Chaka did a little bit, but leaving him out of it, because I have a feeling that he was the character.
He was probably a network mandate too.
That somebody went, okay, we need some comic relief. We need our C-3PO and R2-D2 in this somewhere.
And he's a fuzzy little caveman with no clothes.
Exactly. But looking at the rest of the story, they played it straight and it worked because of the time it was in.
And Enoch was fucking evil too.
Yes. And Will Ferrell, what he did, he missed the playing it straight part. He played it as a comedy. He promoted it as a comedy. He promoted it going, I'm going to take this. They did the same thing with Dark Shadows. I'm going to take this very serious drama that, yes, it's dated.
Goofy, it's got goofy.
It's got some goofy elements.
But it was earnest.
But it was played straight and it was earnestly done. And we're going to turn it into a wacky, crazy, sexy comedy with Johnny Depp. It doesn't work when you do that. When you take out Airplane with the Zucker Brothers. Fucking comedic brilliance on film. Yeah. One of the funniest films that stands up and I still laugh at to this day.
Do you know one of the reasons that film works so well? It's because some of it is just changing the tone.
Yes.
Because like, you know the line, you know, Shirley, you can't be serious.
Yes.
Don't call me Shirley. Don't Call Me Shirley is not in the original.
Right.
But in the original movie that they're making fun of, that same line is delivered the same way.
Yeah.
It's just when you change the tone around it, it makes it funny without having to change it.
Exactly. And one of the most important things is, I'll bet if you were able to sit down with any of those characters, not the actors, the actual characters, and say,
Stryker, 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 Stryker.
Were you playing in a comedy they'd be like, no, we were doing high drama.
The characters were trying to survive.
They were trying to survive. They were in high drama. It's just that the world is so satirical that it works. And that's why that's why stuff like Airplane and the Zucker Brothers stuff and even their ultra goofy stuff like Top Secret still works because
none of the characters are in on the joke.
Exactly. With Will Ferrell and Adam Sandler and a lot of modern comics, they're going, we're going to be funny. Look at this. Look at how funny I am. I'm funny. Look at this. This is funny. This is funny. And they play it that way. They do. If Will Ferrell, that's one of the reasons why I liked the first Anchorman was because he at least played Ron Burgundy straight. Ron Burgundy was always Ron Burgundy. Ron Burgundy wasn't sitting there going, this is funny. This is what I'm doing here is funny. He was at least reacting genuinely how the character would react.
All right, I'll give you that.
Versus Anchorman 2 and some of the other Will Ferrell and the people in Lost in the Static. Lost in the Static.
See, you're doing it too.
God damn it. The people in Land of the Lost.
They're almost in on the joke.
They are not almost. They are in on the joke. They're coming out and they're delivering their line and play me off, Benny. Yada yada da 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 da. That you expect that in that movie and it doesn't work. I think if we're going to redo Land of the Lost and make it timeless, play it straight. Be goofy. Take it out of context.
Yeah, you can. There are goofy things.
Yes.
You can even have the characters kind of realize this is nuts.
Yes.
But you don't play it with a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. This is nuts.
Right.
You know, okay, let me ask you this. Now, this movie never got made, thank God. But in the late 90s, this is right after Jim Carrey became a fucking superstar. For the longest time, at one point, Kevin Smith was called in to do a write on this script. This is right when they started to say, hey, let's take old 70s TV shows and we make them as goofy comedies. You know, like Starsky and Hutch
and the Dukes of Hazzard.
Right.
And, yeah.
And it was, and this does play into our topic tonight, which I think could have worked. And unfortunately, Kevin Smith said the script was fucking terrible. It was basically Inspector Gadget, but $6 million man. Jim Carrey gets injured, but $6 million doesn't buy as much in 1999 as it did in 1979.
Right.
So none of his gadgets work right, and he's, you know, defective and whatnot. And that was the gag that, ha ha, $6 million doesn't buy as much as it used to.
Look, everybody, thought, economic inflation, yeah. Ha ha ha.
And I thought, okay, technically that could be funny, okay? On paper, that could be funny. But basically what they were saying was, we're making Jim Carrey Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
Okay? At that point, you go, no, the $6 million man needs to take place in the 70s. Or if you're going to do him in the 90s, it can't be $6 bucks because they are right on that. $6 bucks doesn't buy what it did in the 70s.
Make him the $600 million man or the $6 billion man.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, what do you think about that? Do you think that would have been a good idea or a bad idea, leaving out the fact that Kevin Smith said the script was fucking terrible, just the idea of how they were going to play that?
It doesn't work. Because Jim Carrey is very good in playing characters like The Mask. Okay? I'll give him that. Comedically, I liked him in The Mask because he was a cartoon character.
Yeah.
And he could be self-referential.
I've got problems with that movie from how much they changed from the source material, but the movie on its own
is not that bad.
No.
And if you compare the movie to the old Looney Tunes and how Looney Tunes used to be self-referential and stuff like that, it works in that context. Unfortunately, Jim Carrey at that time, that's all he did.
Oh yeah. He was in a rut, basically.
From In Living Color onward. Because it was
he didn't start getting experimental until the early 2000s.
Right. But that's he found a formula that worked and he really stuck with it there for a while. And it would not have worked for $6 Million Man because we would have ended up with Inspector Gadget. And frankly, I think Matthew Broderick did a perfect job.
I hated that movie.
God. But anyway.
Yeah, that movie is fucking awful.
Yes, it was not even so bad it's good. It was just bad. And I heard there was a sequel. I've never seen it, and I never will.
They couldn't get Matthew Broderick back, so French Stewart took over the role.
You're fucking kidding me.
No, I'm serious. I'll show you the trailer on YouTube. No, you won't. Yeah, but no. French Stewart's Inspector Gadget in the second one.
Ooh. Okay. For the Inspector Gadget films to work, that was another one that they went and... Okay, yes, Inspector Gadget was kind of a goofy slapstick cartoon.
But he was also a parody, ironically enough, of a parody. He was a parody of...
Inspector Clouseau.
No. No, he was a parody of... not Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Get Smart?
Get Smart. He was a parody of Get Smart, which was a parody of James Bond.
Right.
And that's kind of what it was. So he was a parody... of a parody
for kids,
dumbed down for kids. But the other thing, and keep in mind, I only saw that movie once, and it was a long time ago. Remember the Inspector Gadget show? Remember how he was really not in the show all that much? That
right.
Penny and the dog did most of everything.
Yes,
they were there, but it was about Inspector Gadget.
Yeah,
you shifted the focus. Yes, I get it. Kids were probably going to be disappointed. The same. I was always disappointed that Inspector Gadget wasn't the focus of the fucking Inspector Gadget show. But I get that now.
Yeah.
Because his shtick would have grown old real fast.
And it did. And it did. And that's precisely what happened. And there were a couple of times when they did humor that didn't fit. I mean, if I remember right, Inspector Gadget was a French cartoon.
I don't remember. It was made by Deke over here.
Deke. Yeah, it was distributed by Deke over here, but I think it was a French cartoon.
Okay.
But and nonetheless, it worked because, like you said, the focus wasn't on Inspector Gadget, and the kids that were watching were interested in how is Penny, you know, how can I live through Penny?
Or the dog.
Or Brain.
I couldn't remember his name.
Brain. Or Brain, and how can I, as a simple child, take part in this mystery and solve it? It just so happens that we have this bumbling uncle that comes along to help in exactly the wrong way at the right time.
Okay. What about a movie? Now, I like the movie. I'm not a big fan of the TV show, but I like the third spinoff.
Okay.
What about Stargate? I'm thinking Stargate is really 1994. From the technology to even how they finally figure out the seventh symbol is by mistake. And I'm like, you realize nowadays you'd be able to connect to databases and Google this shit and find the star patterns to recognize it. And it's like, this is so 1994 when this movie takes place.
Yeah, that and the aesthetic of the film is very 1990s because this is the same time as I always kind of lump Stargate and The Fifth Element together.
I don't know why. They don't really have much in common, but okay.
Aesthetically, they do.
Not really. I don't know if I would say that French guy who directed Fifth Element, who just fell out
Luc
of my
Besson.
Head. Besson. And Devlin and Emmerich. They're not very stylistically similar, man.
I don't know. Somehow they mesh in my head, though. Like, I could see Stargate happening in the same world as Fifth Element, and... Yeah, anyway. somehow they mesh in my head quite well. But they both have that aesthetic of their time. And the aesthetic of... Well, the Fifth Element. The aesthetic of the Fifth Element... Playing today, just looking at it,
it's very comic.
It's like looking at Art Deco. You look at Art Deco and you're like, aha, 30s. Or if you look at Egyptian Revival, 30s. Boom, there it is, in its time. and you look at Fifth Element, you're like, ah, 90s.
Well, okay. One that I can't stand this movie, but what about You've Got Mail? That could only have taken place in the early 90s.
And that could only have taken place during the heyday of AOL.
Well, speaking of that, what about the weird product placement that instantly dates your film? Like, you know, in Blade Runner, Atari logos and TDK tapes and tapes, you know,
yeah.
TDK tapes
yeah.
in Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. Or in 2010, you keep in mind, made in 1984, Pan Am, Flight to the Moon. Yeah, yep. That didn't last, you know. Do you think sometimes the, or even worse, the referencing a current band or TV show or something like that, like how the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie makes like 3 Bart Simpson references. Yes, the Simpsons are still technically on the air. That dates that movie to 1990, doesn't it?
That dates that movie to 1990. Also, the fact that they went, all right, who's our big hip band that to
Vanilla to Ice.
Vanilla Ice.
Because he'll be around forever, right?
Exactly.
Well, technically, he's not in the first one, but the second film.
He's
you know
brilliant. I mean. Yeah, you know, he's a brilliant musical mastermind. He'll be here till the end of time, and then he goes fucking insane and then ends up with a home improvement show and in a metal band. Eh? But yeah, I mean, you know, it's, there are a lot of tie-ins like that.
Like
Terminator and Dr. Pepper.
The one that I liked was, I was watching a 70s movie and this is just such 70s jargon. Just go down to the Chevron station. Are there still Chevron stations anywhere?
There's a Chevron station in town.
Yeah, but it's not so ubiquitous that the Chevron station just means gas station, like it did in the
70s.
Yeah. If you didn't say, I'm going to the gas station, even if you were going to a Shell, you'd call it the Chevron. I'm going to the Chevron, because they were so ubiquitous.
Yeah. Or to go even a little bit further, I'm going to go get my car serviced at the Sinclair.
I don't know that one.
Sinclair is, I think they may still be out west, but okay. Especially across the south, Sinclair stations were it's like Quick Trip up here.
Okay. Oh, we got tons of Quick Trips.
Yeah. You know, but, or if you're in Muncie and you're going to a convenience store, you're going to a Village Pantry. Doesn't matter if it's not a Village Pantry, you're going to the VP. And, up here, if you're going to the convenience store, hey, I gotta go to Quick Trip, pick up some milk in bags. It's the only place I've ever seen milk in bags in the United States. There's that sneeze. You've been waiting on that for an hour.
I like their bagged milk, in all honesty.
Oh, I do too.
Maybe it's just the aesthetic. Maybe if like you did a test and poured like jug milk and bag milk in different glasses, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. To me, it tastes different, Scott. It does.
To me, I can taste the difference in their chocolate milk. Okay, Quick Trip has the best chocolate milk. This episode brought to you by Quick Trip.
You know what? If we're going to go chocolate milk, I really do like True Moo. My son doesn't like True Moo, but I really like True Moo chocolate milk.
Not a big fan of True Moo here.
My son doesn't like it either, but I like True Moo.
Nature's Touch.
You know what? But then also, you get the bag milk from Quick Trip, and then you use Quick Chocolate in there to double quick it. Now that's fucking chocolate milk.
What if you add Quick to chocolate milk? What if
Quick
you add
Trip chocolate milk?
Exactly.
Then it's extra chocolatey. God damn, that's deep.
And the world would just implode upon its chocolatey yumminess.
You know what I want you to try because you like to try things? You know how like when you're making Kraft mac and cheese and you got to add like a quarter cup of milk?
No.
It doesn't say it has to be white milk.
Josh, I'm going to stop you there because I've done that. Yeah, I was
Is it
young.
As gross as it sounds?
Yes, it's 10 times worse. I was young. It was experimental. It was a strange time. I was in college. I was alone in the dorm room with the chocolate milk and the mac and cheese. And you look and you go, I like chocolate milk. I like mac and cheese.
These two things would be great together.
Yes. No, they're not.
And then as you're bent over the toilet.
It's not quite that bad, but I took about 2 bites. Because you know me, I try everything twice.
And then it's like, well, that was a wasted 79 cents.
Yeah, well, so much for that.
So, all right, you guys have a good night. And remember, go to Adam and Eve and go to drivethroughstuff.com.
And thanks a lot for joining us. Definitely check out 1201beyond.com. And
you're about to say that in the close.
That's right. I've got this. How handy.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.
5.